beaming into your mind like a ray of cosmic revelation, smashing through the mainstream like a cabinet of prophecy. You're listening to Planet Verloc, your podcast for everything super psionics and magic tech. Lords and ladies, welcome to my show. I am your not-so-humble host, Herr Doktor von Verloc, master of the phantom frequency and the psionic arts. And it has been a long road to achieve this title. Tonight's podcast is titled Dinner and a Ghost with Stacy. In my first year of college, some decades ago, I took an electives course on magic, religion, and witchcraft. It was the first course of its kind ever in a community college. During class, I studied over the various cultures and magical systems attributed to many peoples and spiritual beliefs. Well, I had somehow made a name for myself as being a rather powerful wizard. This astounded me, as I was not very outspoken at that time, and I knew very few people on campus. Nevertheless, there were a few people who remembered my name from my earlier years in high school. And that was at the time a select few friends knew anything about my training under the psionics master, Charles Cosmano. However, I had exhibited some abilities of my own with kinetics in reading thoughts, patterns, and foreseeing future events, so there was already a certain expectation by the few people in this college classroom who knew something about me from word of mouth. And what happened next was exactly what my old mentor had always warned me about. Someone asked me for help with a very terrifying recurring supernatural experience. I am going to tell you about this story and why you need to have a very special kind of protection when working on paranormal investigations or dabbling into the uber weird. So without further ado, let us begin. There's probably a handful of people in the field of paranormal investigation who actually understand the very real threat of entities inhabiting the invisible spectrum. Perhaps this is due to the concept that there must be some logical explanation to the activities in the invisible world of spirits or ghosts, two categories which often are entangled together and treated as interchangeable terms, though I assure my personal students in the Verloc.club that these two labels are very different in actuality. What happened to me is that I had a very natural magnetism for drawing out spirits from the hidden thresholds between worlds. No, I am not a medium. My talent is sort of different than that. But to say the very least, entities of the invisible realm have always taken an interest in my presence. The first encounter of mine I have already podcasted about previously in The Visitor in the Dark, and you may go back and enjoy that episode. Also, I have a YouTube video describing some of my encounters called The Fear of Spirits. Tonight I want to tell you a very different kind of story. It is a story about being unprepared for the worst. As I have already begun telling this story in part, I will jump a bit forward to the real occurrences and sequences I can remember them. I knew a lovely girl, and her name was Stacy, and who had been in one of my classes back in high school. Well, she was now in my college class in the Magic, Religion, and Witchcraft course with our very liberal professor, who told us some some of the wildest stories on the planet, had a phenomenal sense of humor, but who was also a little too outspoken on some rather, well, uncomfortable topics like human sexuality and very open-minded forms of adult entertainment. Yes, the school staff was constantly, very often, calling him in for meetings to talk to him about this sort of thing. Well, as the majority of us in the class were somewhere between the ages of 19 and 20, these stories rather amused us at the time of bursting hormones and new horizons opening in our very early adult years. To say the least, the class was entertaining and included roundtable discussions, lots of comparison reading, and a study of films, essays, and special guest speakers, ranging from real field anthropologists to modern day shamans. In the break between classes, Stacy approached me with a friend of hers. I saw the look on Stacy's face and realized that there was something deeply troubling her, though she had a very polite and reserved personality, generally speaking. Fair skin, wavy deep red hair with long curled bangs, her eyes were like emeralds. She reminded me of one of the ladies of royalty from a scene out of the film about Amadeus Mozart or something. So, I sat down with Stacy and her friend to hear about her troubles at home. I was asked to investigate and possibly banish the demon that was haunting her and her boyfriend. Immediately, I recommended, as a matter of course, that we speak to our professor, as I assumed he would have far more knowledge in this venue. But Stacy rejected the idea. She claimed the teacher was, well, first of all, a complete stranger, and she knew nothing about him. I, at least, was known to Stacy, and that the teacher was probably more of an entertainer than any kind of actual wizard. But Stacy had heard about my abilities and wanted a real wizard to investigate the terror which stalked her. And so, with a little flattery, and of course bribing me with lots of free food, I agreed to meet with Stacy and her boyfriend. One early afternoon, I arrived at Stacy's house. I rapped on the large, ornate portal of dark oak wood, which was her front door. While I waited, I noticed a peculiar timeliness, or rather timelessness, about the entire place. I reflected that while on the drive to Stacy's home, nothing was unusual, with the typical liquor store and gas station every couple of blocks on the way. And yet, upon my arrival at this rather Victorian-looking home, I felt as if I'd magically teleported from Orange County, California, to an old-fashioned neck of the woods in Cambridge, England. Stacy's parents welcomed me inside and asked me to wait within the common area. When I had taken in much of the fine arts and antiquities of the common area, I had nearly forgotten my reason for coming to this house. My senses were taken away by the art and antiques in the room, and the ancient furnishings. Then Stacy came downstairs quickly and gave me a hug, which was odd because she'd never touched me before. Then, seeing her actions out of the ordinary, she recomposed herself and asked if I would like to see the room where things were going bump in the night. Well, a wry smile I suppressed from appearing on my face and nodded, but then remembered I'd left my gear outside in the car. But I agreed to see the room first before grabbing all my devices. Stacy's boyfriend, who had not come down the stairs, was in the room waiting for us. I introduced myself, and so did he. I don't recall his name, unfortunately. The boyfriend was laying on Stacy's bed with a sprained ankle that had a rather disturbing story behind it. I immediately began to suspect that this whole thing was some kind of a ruse, that I was being set up for some really strange or kinky tease, but I allowed myself patience enough to hear the two of these young lovers tell their tale. What happened was a series of visitations in the night where things were bumping around in the room, knocking on the door to the bedroom, but then no one thereupon answering the door. As time passed, Stacy continued her story, that there was a shadowy presence in the room, which seemed to want to draw her attention to it. As for her boyfriend, his telling of the tale was rather difficult. First of all, he was very, very reluctant to talk about what had been happening in that room at night, though I could see plainly by the expression upon his face that something scared him. But he suppressed his awareness of the events going on, saying that he simply felt a burning under his feet as if someone were lighting a fire under his toes at night, but that it was, in his mind, probably just a medical issue, and everything else Stacy had talked about or assumed was probably just their imagination and a coincidence. I asked if he would be offended if I did some dowsing and radionics work on the spot in that room. To the boyfriend, this made no difference to him. He really wasn't interested in the work as I explained it to him, but Stacy listened very attentively, which made me feel that because she appreciated my efforts, that perhaps, just perhaps, this was not some elaborate hoax, and that indeed something supernatural, or rather paranormal, was taking place in this room, which was Stacy's personal bedroom. I asked again to both persons whether or not such activities as similar paranormal quality had occurred for other members of the family in the house and in any other room of the house. To this, I was surprised to learn that the answer was no, with one exception. The boyfriend had had some rather nasty accidents in the past while shaving and showering in the bathroom just down the hall. The types of accidents which he described are unlike a person to be so careless, and of those details, I will digress here. One thing I had forgotten to mention is that Stacy and I had been in a counseling session together back in high school. Well, it was one of those new services that the dean of the school authorized for students who felt that they were having some difficulties with other students, life or so on or what have you. And I simply enjoyed getting a good hour out of class once a week, and so I volunteered to be there. And it was a great place to hear about other people's stories. And besides, there were pretty girls in the counseling session every Wednesday. And that is where I first met our friend, Stacy. I think maybe her parents were a bit strict and didn't really show a whole lot of affection in the household with her daughter. But this I only suspected. So to me, this meeting was kind of remotely personal. There was a kind of openness or huge relief for Stacy that I had agreed to come to her house. Thus, I realized that more was going on here than the mere physical, and than my investigating a paranormal phenomenon, or hunting down of some kind of entity. I was also here in her home to show support on a spiritual level, that of brotherhood to sisterhood, if that makes some sense. At length, I went downstairs and began unloading my instruments from the back seat of my car. A special amplifying mechanism I'd re-engineered just for kicks, but which was also used for technomantic divination and could do a few other things besides. My pendulum and my dowsing rod, of course, and a few patterns which I had discovered over the years of working meditation and magic, having the added benefit of increasing the effectiveness of my overall dowsing and intuitive abilities. As I gathered these things, I could not help but suspect something was out of place about Stacy's boyfriend. As well, there was something out of place about the entire house, and more so about Stacy's parents, perhaps an unresolved issue. I don't know, maybe a divorce or a death in the family. But all I could feel that somewhere down the road, Stacy and her parents needed to have some kind of an honest conversation. I pressed these thoughts quickly out of my mind, knowing that such thoughts are merely hunches and are not necessarily the facts. I had a job to do. Therefore, I confirmed in my mind that I should set about to the task of discovering some of these facts, so long as it pertained to the paranormal activity in that particular room. I set up my equipment in Stacy's room. The amplifier picked up the usual possible sounds of white noise, but I muted the volume and ran the kinetic power to a secret divination chart that my former mentor had made specifically for my work when I was training under him in learning about sigils and spirits. This I have kept secret to this day and have not shared with anyone else, and I plan to keep this arrangement completely secret. To make a long story short, I found that there was no disembodied mind in that room, at least willing to make itself known during the dowsing process. However, most chillingly, I detected from over Stacy's shoulder someone watching me. And Stacy's eyes at that time were not on me, but rather looking down at the ground. And when I looked back, there it was. Someone staring at me over Stacy's shoulder from behind her. That was my third intuitive hint in this trip. The first was the timelessness about the house, albeit such impressions could have bewitched my mind by all of the antiquarian atmosphere about the ornamented wood and arch of the front door, or the many antiques and collectible arts about the common area within the house. But the second hunch, which was the difference in character between Stacy and her boyfriend, stood out like a scar. And the third hint, which came to me as the undeniable but elusive pair of invisible eyes watching me from behind my friend Stacy. The hair on my arm stood up, but I did not tell Stacy about it. I figured that the two of them had already been through quite a lot losing sleep, and that my feeding their anxieties with my subtle hints would only encourage their imaginations, rather adversely. I told Stacy to call me if anything happened, which unfortunately happened. Back at home, my parents' phone rang relentlessly near midnight. I apologized to my dad, who had to get up early for work, and explained that I had some work to do for a fellow student at my college. Because the fellow student happened to be female, I believe my stepfather kind of understood and handed me the phone, so on the other end of the line, I was apologized to by Stacy. She was on her way over to the hospital and wanted me to meet with them. I almost refused to drive over when Stacy offered to come pick me up, which I decided I felt like getting out of the house for a midnight run of whatever it was we were going to do, because, well, frankly, I was one of those dark romantics who rather enjoyed the night. In any event, Stacy's car door opened and I leapt in. Her boyfriend apologized for having to get me up at night, but his foot had been more severely injured since last time I'd been at their house. I asked what had happened. While Stacy was driving us, her boyfriend explained to me that something that he could not understand had just happened to him, and that this was an emergency. He was in agonizing pain throughout the trip, but he was also a big fella with a lot of fortitude, so he was able to explain to me that somehow a ghastly presence appeared before him. And while he slept on the bed, it sliced open his foot while he was lying in the bed next to Stacy. Terrified, they did not know what to do. I admit that I began to feel rather unnerved about this entire ordeal, and at length I began to wonder if these people were not more trouble than they were worth. But I was among a friend, and we made our way to the hospital. And so I helped Stacy's large man walk into the hospital. You know, it was rather comical looking at the time, with little me trying to support the weight of a rather big dude on one side and the thin lady-like feline figure of Stacy trying to keep him from falling on the other side. The man's foot was bandaged up pretty bad, and the blood began to show through the bandages. Well, the doctor went to work stitching up the wound while Stacy and I took off on a long walk through the quiet halls of the hospital after midnight. In those hallowed hours, we stumbled upon an open area, sort of a loft in the hospital, and there, in the midst of stride, we came upon a green statue, almost as if it were made of pure jade. I forget exactly of what this statue was, but I had dreamed of it before in different landscapes, as well as this hospital, and I recognized myself standing in this vision at present. This gave Stacy and I some time to talk and catch up on some of what we'd been doing in life, and what we'd hoped to do, now that we were no longer locked up in kiddie prison, aka high school. Stacy wanted to take off to France to become fluent in French, so I told her I wanted to be an astronomer, a philosopher, a fine arts painter, a rock band vocalist, and an engineer. So we basically agreed that Stacy had her shit together better than I did, with exception to the current situation at hand, where my expertise were supposedly very useful. What I gathered from speaking with Stacy was as much as I had suspected, but I decided it was best to keep out of their affairs respectively. After the doctor had done his good work on the foot, we had a good meal at the only place open, drive-through food. I think we had Carl's or Del Taco, but anyway, I digress. Free food, I'm all for it. What happened to me later is the real crux, however. The real crux of the matter, yes. I had been called by Stacy's boyfriend to join him for some drinks at a party. This I felt rather odd, but I decided I'd join him just out of curiosity. Well, when I arrived, Stacy wasn't there at the little gathering, and the boyfriend didn't want to really speak about her, but he did want to say how much he appreciated the support I showed them. It was kind of strange. There was sort of a heartlessness about the man. Oddly, however, he disappeared into another room with a different lady friend who was biting at his neck and grabbing him hungrily or whatnot. Feeling rather disgusted and disturbed by all that had gone on, I left the house without a word and drove myself home. A day later, on a rather nice and sunny day, I was free to do what I wanted with the house, all to myself. My house. My parents went out to a gathering with some friends, so I began making myself something to drink in the kitchen. I received a phone call. Yes, it was from Stacy, asking if I'd learned anything new about the spirit problem, which I had. And I had attempted to douse from home a few times to some degree of success, but the information that I received I felt much adverse to share with my Muggle friends, and I did not want to hurt Stacy's feelings at the time. At length, I felt bad for not telling her, and I explained as much as I could carefully to Stacy what I gathered, which was thus. Stacy was being guarded over by an ancestral kind of spirit, a spirit which knew that this man, her boyfriend, was a cheat and an all-around no-good Nick, who just enjoyed her parents' money and generous hospitality, but a man who had no intention of ever sharing life or giving something back, particularly to her. While I expected Stacy to then hang up the phone with a violent slam, I was surprised to hear that she suspected I was telling her the truth, and that she appreciated it. And so I hung up and went about my day trying to patch up my own life back to usual, which felt rather good to finally be free of all that was really other people's life path and not my own. But things started to go really wrong for me very quickly after that last phone call. First, while about to take my drink out of the kitchen, I felt the hair on my arm stand up again, this time like hard spikes. Quite literally, the hairs on my arm stood up firm and sort of brittle, like plastic, not even like hair. I had spikes on my arm. Then as two hands locked onto my forearm, I was given a rather nasty Indian burn. The arm twisted. It was as if my arm was possessed by an invisible force, displacing my will with its own. I shook it off and began to leave the room when, from behind me, I was struck very hard in the back of my neck, just below the back of my head, and I heard a loud crack in my ears. Turning and gathering my courage, taking out a knife from the kitchen drawer, I pointed that knife in the direction that I felt the entity approach, and I visualized a beam of blue light strike at it, while I, in no uncertain terms, commanded this entity to leave from my home. I then ran to the kitchen window and opened it. I closed all other windows in the house, upstairs included. I burned smudge sticks over the stairs, the other thresholds, closets in the house, and I worked my way towards that open window, directing the entity out from my house through that open window in the kitchen. Time passed before I realized that I had a serious injury in the back of my neck. Going to a chiropractor, they gave me a full 3D x-ray imagery to reveal the vertebra knocked sheer out of alignment in the back of my neck, which meant I would need multiple readjustments over the years to come. In another scenario, years later in Japan, I was in a cemetery about to snap a photograph of a beautiful headstone when my digital camera was slapped out of my hand by an invisible force. I immediately summoned mentally with my mind my dynamic defender and the presence of the disruptive entity vanished from my presence. In a number of events, I have called upon the power of protective servitors when in dangerous situations. This is why I recommend listening through my audiobook, Dynamic Defenders and Powerful Protectors, particularly if you or someone close to you, someone you know, is involved in paranormal research or involved in working in places where angry souls still roam unchecked. I know some paranormal events or occurrences can be explained away by simple natural causes, electricity, and so on, but you never know when you might walk in or stumble into the Twilight Zone. And things can happen really fast if you don't have any protection. And I recommend the best protection, which is a powerful servitor you create with the purpose of shielding you from such attacks and warding off such entities. With this warning and encouragement to learn about dynamic defender servitors, I conclude tonight's story. Those of you interested, you may download my audiobook, Dynamic Defenders and Powerful Protectors, from my shop. I'll leave the link in the description section. And hopefully, you don't have to experience the same mistakes that I made. Compassion, unprepared, can get you into a whole universe of trouble. And I can still feel that pain today. Thank you for joining me tonight on Planet Verloc, Psionics Podcast. And until next time, as always, always keep the magic high. This is Tom Verloc, signing out.